Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay. Looks like we're recording now.
God damn it. Doug Benson, we've had the weirdest, most cursed... We actually recorded Doug one time before.
A few weeks ago.
The file turned out weird.
Why'd you do it, Doug?
And then we've been through two computers and a different recording system that we could not... we were having problems with that, too. So now we're just recording on my Zoom H2. So hopefully this sounds okay.
Sounds fine.
Well, as long as we all stare at it like this while talking.
That's all
we
much over.
Need to lean
poor
in.
Doug.
We don't want to accidentally talk in the wrong direction.
Yeah, sorry.
Not to take all the fun out of it, Doug.
It is. Yeah. It's omnidirectional.
Oh, also, we're all going
like
to have to put a right
four
arm
four front men. Yeah. I'll lean into it. And it makes me uncomfortable when dudes that are in the same band together get all in close like that when they're singing, like when they share a mic.
What about benefit concerts when they're all like, it was like five of them on the
stage? What about back-to-back guitar soloing?
Oh, that's fine.
That's, well, if it's two dudes like touching backs, what's the point really? Is one going to like flip over the other one or something?
No, just like, you know, rocking out could be so exhausting that you just need to
lean against.
What about Band-Aids? Do they know it's Christmas where you're like, are Boy George, Sting, and Bono going to kiss right now? Do you think they're going to lean
they
in
did
and kiss?
Just after the
do you think they're going to make out for Africa?
That's a new concert I'm going to
start. Make out for Africa?
Make out for Africa. It's just going to be me making out.
It's about time.
Right? I think so.
And there's another thing he's starting, Tantric for Africa.
Tantric for Africa.
I will not come until Africa is free.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know.
15 hours. Right? Isn't that his...
That's what he
his,
says?
That's what he says.
15?
He can have sex for 15 hours.
Does he ejaculate after 15 hours, or is he just like, well, I'm done?
I don't know, because I get bored of sex after about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think...
If that.
15 hours is not... I mean, anyone who's tried to have sex for like an hour straight... You kind of know. I mean, imagine it's almost like water torture. Like you just keep rubbing one area long enough, and then you know it goes from pleasurable to.
Do our listeners have sex?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure at least some of them do. Right.
Well, I was thinking when I was driving over here that this is like an extra nerdy episode of Nerdist because we could not be doing this on a more beautiful day.
Yeah.
Well, me, like, it's gorgeous outside, and we're sitting in here.
It's really hot outside, though, to be fair. It's
Matt
really
and I,
hot.
It's Matt, hot, but it's still just beautiful.
Matt and I were walking up, and we're like, it's a really nice day. Maybe we should do this outside. And then we're like, no, there's no shade outside of this house.
No, seriously, though.
We don't want the sun.
Listen, three super white guys do not need to be in direct sunlight.
No, that's why I wear the long sleeves, even on a warm day like this. But I just like it, and
that's what they
right before we start. Right before we started, Jonah was asking me if there was any barbecues I was going to this weekend. I realized that they're probably happening now if there are any.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we're having a mental barbecue of comedy.
Yeah.
With comedy steaks.
Together with Starbucks and sit at a dining room table and talking to a microphone.
Well, our first episode was on Super Bowl Sunday, so I guess it's fitting. You know?
You guys forgot about that. Always ignore big events.
Are we recording?
Not on purpose.
We're
just sort of
July,
happens.
Right,
yeah, we're going to record 4th of July.
Can't wait for
the
New Year's.
4th of July is such a, like, I mean, I love the Yay America part of it, but the... Fireworks don't change from year to year. Nobody really takes them up a notch.
No.
Barbecues don't change. The heat is the same usually, although it's in California, it's often overcast.
That's why we need to have Emeril's fireworks and barbecue spectacular.
I
and
usually
then
go
you
up
can
to
just
the
say
roof.
Bam to the fireworks.
I usually go up to the roof of my apartment building and watch all of them. Like, I enjoy the neighborhood displays that are going on. And
the illegal fireworks, yeah.
Yeah, but then you can see, like, Santa Monica going. Sometimes you can see...
Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all look kind of the same,
right?
Yeah.
Like, fireworks always look...
Or beautiful and
explosions.
Patriotic, whatever.
Yeah. How is it patriotic, though? I mean,
they explode, I guess.
I guess, so like explosions...
It's a Chinese tradition,
it's what's helped
Jonah.
Us kill people
war.
Through wars to keep our nation
These
together.
Aren't killy explosions. These are pretty explosions.
Have you seen, like my uncle went, like, did a couple tours in Vietnam, and, like, every time there was fireworks, he would, end up, like, kind of just, like, grabbing someone's arm, and, like... It was weird because he'd be watching it, but then for some reason one of them would just trigger something, and then
for some reason, I don't know.
Yeah.
Dogs really hate it, the fireworks. Like, yes. That's one reason I'm like, why, if every dog in town is going to be nervous and shaking all night long, that's not a, we should just go ahead and not have fireworks.
You give a dog some Benadryl, actually.
Yeah. That's why I got a fireworks terrier. He actually lights fireworks himself.
They can't get used to it because it happens for them every 7 years.
That's true. Yeah. Their independence is a little bit. Well, actually, to be fair, dogs are not free yet. They have not been liberated, so they don't have an Independence Day of any kind. We still own them.
Dominate them.
Yeah.
They love it.
Stupid dog.
My roommate just went to China. Went to a bunch of different like small villages and stuff like that, and said that dog is still a prevalent item on the menus out there. Nice. In small villages.
But they don't say what kind of dog. They just say dog.
Yeah, they just say dog. But like, I guess what's happening is that. Owning a dog is becoming like a sign of like affluence and power
because you don't have to eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
But if shit goes down, you have something.
You have it there.
That's there.
Yeah. To have a portly dog, that means.
I'm gonna get some cows though in my house though, because that'll mean I'm affluent because I don't have to eat the steaks.
It's kind of true though. If you had cows in your house, I would think that you were rich.
if I had cows walking around my house, you don't think I would be a fucking hillbilly?
No, it's like
kind of desperate. Like, there's obviously a hole in the house that they got into.
Well, he made the hole. He probably paid somebody to make the hole for the cows to get through.
Shh, guys, there's cows in the walls. There's cats. Why do I keep all that hay there?
God, the cows are coming from inside the house.
The cows are when a stranger cows. Boo.
I'm just sitting here waiting for the cow discussion to end.
Well, Doug, it shouldn't be a surprise. I play a talking cow on Nickelodeon's Back at the Barnyard, so everything relates to cows to me. Yeah. And I'm done. Doug.
That's good. I like the way you get into character and really think about it.
Yeah, I really sit through. Not what just... would it be like to be a male cow with udders that don't exist in life?
He actually didn't watch Temple Grandin just because he didn't want to feel that pain.
Is there any, Doug Benson, any movies coming out that you're excited about? But let's talk about MacGruber for a second, because I've not seen MacGruber.
So much funnier than anyone's giving it credit for.
I heard it's hilarious, and yet, like, biggest box office bomb for an SNL movie ever is what I heard.
Really? More than It's Pat?
That didn't really get
more
released.
More than the Stuart Smalley movie?
Stuart Smalley Saves His Family?
Wow, I forgot.
I mean, it made like $4 million, $4.1 million.
It did not have a great opening weekend, but it went up against... some monster called Shrek, and then the ongoing monster that is Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are you going to do? It's a hard movie to promote, I think, because you can't really say Will Forte or Kristen Wiig as, like, you know, people don't treat them as movie stars as such. And the MacGruber sketch was always a one-note sketch where they just blew up at the end every time. So it's probably hard for people to envision, oh, that's going to be hilarious as a movie. And then on top of it, it's really for, I think it's for boys more than it is for girls. I think some girls will find it funny, but it's really a lot of poo-poo caca.
Is it R-rated or is it?
It's a hard R.
It's a very hard R because it's super violent, too.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Violence is great.
I'm wondering,
it's really funny violence, yeah.
I'm wondering, do you think people as a whole are just kind of wary now of that style of comedy where it's like, oh, someone, you know, pretending, someone taking something stupid really seriously kind of comedy.
Well, it does have this weird element of Austin Powers, I think, mm-hmm. of just this guy from a bygone era, you know, being called back to do you know, some more, you know, detective work or whatever. But like,
they don't have, like, you know, like, that's sort of what made the Austin Powers movies work, I assume, is just sort of the wacky characters around him. But, like, MacGruber's, like, really the wacky character, and everyone else plays it really straight.
Exactly, which I like.
It's fun. I saw it at South by Southwest, so after it was over, I kept saying to myself, but was it really as great as it felt? Because that night, it was, you know, the cast was there. And at South by, you know, everybody loves everything. You know, like when I saw Kick-Ass at South by Southwest, I walked out of there confident that was going to be a smash hit all over the world. And, you know, and it's just done okay.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it comes down to the marketing. I think in MacGruber and Kick-Ass's case, I think lots of people that would enjoy it have either don't know exists or doesn't think it's for them.
Or do you think there's a stigma because it's an SNL movie that people are like,
I don't think, I just don't think people make the connection at all. I just think that no matter how much you yell MacGruber, it doesn't mean anything to anyone. Because it was never, it was never a runaway. People weren't saying catchphrases from that sketch, and therefore it got turned
Like Wayne's World. I mean, I remember when the Wayne's World movie came out, it was such a it was such a part of pop culture by the time that it came out as a movie.
It still holds as, I think, the best SNL movie ever made. You know, I think it's I can't think of a better one. I mean, it's not saying much. Most SNL movies suck. But, like, I think Wayne's World
stands on its own.
There's got to be... Well, I mean, like, Blues Brothers movies in a league all of its own, because it's such a crazy over-the-top
That's
movie.
That's true, but I guess you could say the same thing about... Sketch. I think with Wayne's World, it's like it's in a league on its own. It's just considered a comedy at this
that
point.
That was on Siskel's top 10 that year that Wayne's World came out. It was, like, number 3 for him.
Wayne's World?
Yeah, I think it's great. I watch it.
Well, he's, you know, he lives in Chicago, so that gave him a big boner. But but I really... think that if I sat down and watched it now, I would not be terribly amused by it.
I watched it recently, and I still enjoyed it.
Did you ever like Wayne's World 2?
Yeah. Because
that was torture
movie,
for me. I couldn't take that one.
Not as a, like a really movie, but like as a series of just kind of like bits and jokes. I liked it, but like I never find myself going back to Wayne's World 2. I find myself going back to Wayne's World.
It's like
to watch it.
Like I watched Ghostbusters 2. Like I torture myself with.
Did you guys go see
Ghostbusters 2? Though is kind of amazingly weird.
Yeah.
Like the whole what Peter McNichol character is really.
So funny.
Janosch Poha.
Really, he's very entertaining.
He's like the
but then the bankruptcy of ideas to go. Let's have something else. Giant walk through the city, and let's have it be like the very serious looking Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Like that was such a misfire.
And not to be too much of a nerd, but they didn't really, the size of that statue didn't really stay consistent.
It wasn't consistent at all.
Like someone had to have seen that and been like, you know, when it steps on the car, that doesn't look at the same size.
That's exactly how I felt in Star Trek IV with the friggin' Klingon ship.
Oh, with the
first scene, they're standing next to it, and then. Anyway.
And then Spock put it in his pocket. You're like, that shouldn't fit in Spock's pocket. And why does Spock have a pocket?
And how does that fit whales?
Metaphysical pockets.
How does that fit whales?
But yeah, me and Matt saw Ghostbusters on Friday at the New Beverly.
So good.
Double featured with Mystery Team, which
also
is a Derek comedy movie, which is awesome.
Oh, I wanted to see. I just met one of those guys.
Great. It's great. It's very funny. It's a very good movie. I think it will go down like as a kind of a cult DVD buy for a lot of kids.
It just came out on DVD, so if you're hearing this, go see it.
Yeah, pick it up. But it was awesome seeing Ghostbusters in a movie theater.
Was it full? Was the theater full?
The theater was packed.
I bet it was.
And it's weird because I grew up watching Ghostbusters, and so there were some things I didn't know were supposed to be funny.
You grew up over 2 hours?
Yes.
Or I was going to say, every day that was the curriculum?
Yes.
You just all day long, Ghostbusters.
That's
Jonah, when we started Ghostbusters, you were in first grade. Yes. I know, and now I'm picking colleges.
I'm like Jack.
Yep.
I learned how to make my eggs on the kitchen counter.
I have the most fun kind of progeria.
Yes, exactly.
But the reactions of audience members, like when you're watching it, it's very different from when you're watching it at home because it's everyone collectively is laughing at things and some stuff. Like I noticed a couple things that I hadn't noticed before, and I've seen that movie.
I want to go back and see like comedies that I enjoyed years ago with an audience. But when you have the opportunity to go see it or just watch it on DVD, it really lessens the experience. You know, like I could still enjoy watching Ghostbusters on TV, but do I laugh out loud at anything that happens in it?
Right.
None of it really surprises me.
What are your favorite comedies?
I like comedies that, like, when I see them again a few years later, they, you know, not only hold up, but they also surprise me.
Like what? Like what?
A great example would be Election.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Is, like, one of the best comedies ever. Spinal Tap.
There was another thing about Tracy. Her pussy gets so wet.
Sure.
The first time I saw that, it was such a phenomenal
amazing movie.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just everybody in it. It's great. It just has a tone that's just very, like, you know, that's the thing that I enjoy about a few of the somewhat newer filmmakers is some of them really have a good feeling for tone, and that's where most movies go astray to me, is most movies just end up being a series of scenes that are sort of strung together with modern hits or something, you know. Like, I took my mom to see Letters to Juliet yesterday because there was no way I was going to see Sex and the City 2,
mm-hmm.
and there was also no way I was going to watch Prince of Persia with my mom. Because she was like, oh, that looks good. And I was like, you know, once you're there, you're not going to enjoy it. So I wanted her to see something she would enjoy.
I'll tell you why I can't see Prince of Persia now, because it just, I went and saw the Lost finale. Alison Hayslip had a bunch of people over, and so I went to her house, and the Prince of Persia commercial came on, and she just goes, oh, I just can't stop staring at Jake Gyllenhaal's shoulders. And I'm like, well, now I can't see this movie because it just feels weird. I don't know. It just felt weird. I'm like, it just, he just, he's so beefcakey in it. Like, I just.
Yeah.
Doesn't he use a British accent, too?
I don't.
Sir, it looks like he's using a smarmy accent. He's,
like, what the fuck is that?
It's some sort of.
I'm the Prince of Persia.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it's some ridiculous. You know, it's a period piece. So
why is it whenever
I'm sure there's some
fake period
piece. Whenever an American plays somebody foreign, regardless of country, it's a British accent.
But, like, you know, they'd probably say something. There's probably a few throwaway lines of dialogue of, like, you know, how you know, he was raised by wolves outside of London.
But think about it, though. Think about it. An American accent, like, the thing about a British accent is that it just denotes that it's not American. If you hear an American accent, right. I feel like... It kind of, like, if I saw him doing an American accent in that movie, I mean, like, once I saw beyond his steaky shoulders, I would feel like, oh, it kind of takes me out of the movie because he's doing an American accent. There's something about British that just denotes foreign. Like,
I call it
foreign,
the Robin Hood Valkyrie argument,
yeah.
Which is Kevin Costner and Tom Cruise speaking in perfect, you know, American, and everyone else is British, and in the case of Valkyrie, they're all supposed to be German.
But if you watch Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves... I think you can almost track the order the movie was shot because you can see the scenes where the accent degenerates, but in other scenes, he's got a little bit of one. And then in the next one, like, hey, little John.
Oh, no, I thought in those scenes he was just mocking the other characters.
I think every movie should do the Hunt for Red October, pull in on the mouths when they're speaking the other language, pull out, and they can talk however they want to talk.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty nifty. Awesome. I was pretty. I think I gave that an applause break when that happened the first time I saw it because that's just a great idea. Like, that's the thing is that a lot of times, like, that's what I like about J.J. Abrams' stuff in general is the guy seems to be thinking ahead of, like, you know, like that the ending matters. You know,
well, he wasn't thinking ahead when he was like, let's put lens flares all over Star Trek. Anyway.
Sorry. Well, that's another story. See, that's the thing is maybe. So you think maybe he shouldn't be directing per se?
I think that someone, perhaps the cinematographer, should have been like, maybe not a great idea for every scene. We don't need lens flares anymore.
I think you're just mad because there were no whales.
There are many ways in the Star Trek. I was sad when Vulcan got blown up.
I really enjoyed the new Star Trek. I thought they.
I liked it, and I own it.
And all the commercials, I was like, "This is fucking Star Trek 90210." Like, it's just a bunch of sexy people. And I saw it, I was like, "Oh, this is genuinely enjoyable."
Every actor in that movie, I thought, did a fantastic job playing the characters. Kind of like.
Oh my god, Carl Urban was amazing.
Yeah. Freaking awesome.
And I thought John Cho was great too.
Yes, I agree.
They all did good. Like, you know. Homage performances, like not a copy, but
they're all
definitely the
them,
spirit
yeah.
of it, though.
Yeah,
like almost like when a good cover song, like if somebody you know makes the song sound great but does it their own way.
It's but when you cool. when you rewatch, I've rewatched it recently, and you just I was just thinking about the lens flare, so I was like, oh, it's not going to bother me, and then it does.
Right. You know what bothered me, and I was reminded of it twice during this conversation. The first time I didn't get it in. Was I was watching the season finale of American Idol because I love American Idol. I can't help myself. And I'm watching it, and they have all these duets with famous people. Where like first of American Idol, one of the idols will come out and start singing a song, and then you're like, oh, that every rose has its thorn. That means Bret Michaels is about to come out.
Right.
And then they would. It was insanely predictable and kind of weirdly so that they would let like them sing like a little bit of somebody's song first. And now you're just waiting for the real deal to come out.
Right.
And in the case of Alanis Morissette, she sang with Crystal Bowersox, and they sang that You Ought to Know song or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what did she change going down into a theater?
That's all I could think about. As soon as the song started, I was like, where's this going? What's she going to say? Instead of going down into a theater?
I was having dinner at my mom's house, and she had it on in the other room, so I didn't see it, but I heard it. And I've not watched American Idol since the Ruben Studdard season, and it was kind of over the show after that.
Yeah,
But I know the general quality of the average singer is amazing. I mean, they're pretty amazing.
And yet green though. Like this year, there was a lot of people that just couldn't get their.
So what did Alana say instead of "Go Down on You" in a theater?
She said. And the other girl, I think, had the line. So that, you know, because they were alternating lines.
Right.
That way, at least Alanis didn't have to butcher her own line.
Right.
But she's the other girl said, "Would he go out with you to the theater?"
Wow, that is the theater. Yeah. So she changed it. So either Alanis's original version is that she was blowing someone during a play.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or
no, would he go out with you to the theater or a theater? I don't know which one it was specifically.
Oh my god, you know they just sat around and agonized, are like, "How do we fix this?"
I wanted to be clowning around with you in the theater.
Would you do your Bullwinkle impression in the theater?
or does he
That was not Dave Coulier. She did
who
not
was it?
That would I've had this conversation with Dave Coulier. The part of the song that was about him. The part from You Can't Do That on Television.
Yeah, the part from You Can't Do That.
All right, you're going to go down on me in this
also,
movie.
Also, though, it's like...
It was the
introduction to the opposite.
Dave Coulier was the one where, when she says, "I hate to bug you" in the middle of dinner, where she calls his house while he's having dinner with his new girlfriend, that was Dave, but she did not blow him in a theater.
That seems like a mistake.
Yeah. But also, it's like, what
sorry.
Difference...
Are, sorry to ruin a bad song for you.
Wouldn't he own up to it, I mean, in terms of... It was probably her idea. It's not like the way the song is written makes it sound like he forced her or coerced her into doing it.
Right.
It's more like she was just a wild girl who did that, and now that she has a new girlfriend, she's like, "Oh, is that one of my things I did wrong?" Was being
he tries to force her
slutty too fast.
I got some Reese's Pieces right here in my pants. You want to get down there?
Yeah. While they're watching Diner, it was the weirdest.
So it was the most bizarre.
It was so weird.
While they were watching,
he got this idea from that. And he's like, "Yeah, I didn't eat a whole popcorn box though."
While they were watching,
I just needed some Reese's Pieces.
a tearjerker like "Men Don't Leave" or "Sophie's Choice."
"Men Don't Leave" is a good movie,
but sad.
Yeah,
but very sad.
But it's good.
The other thing that I noticed about the American Idol finale is, and I know it's popular to shit on this gentleman, but when I heard Dane Cook's voice come on, and my first thought is, WT fuck? Why is he on American Idol?
Carlos Mencia's act.
I've covered this before. The only reason I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the comedy he does now because I think he could do smarter comedy because he is a smart guy. The only reason I don't like him is because he was specifically rude to me personally. So I'm not just a comic who's jumping on the old fuck that guy bandwagon. I genuinely had a bad experience with him on top of the fact that I think he
could do better.
He's been nothing but
nice to me, and I'm still not. I don't know what to think.
Well, anyway... the point is, I heard his voice, and so of course I'm like, "Well, what the fuck?" So I go in and watch, and it was genuinely a bummer to see when he was doing a song on stage. They cut to Simon. He did a song.
He came out with a guitar. I did a roast of Simon Cowell because it's Simon Cowell's last night, so they were making fun of him all night long. Like, they let Paula Abdul come back out, and she crazied it up. But they had Dane Gould. Dane Gould came out. Sang a song about therapy.
And being from Massachusetts.
No, Dane Cook, they let him come out with a guitar. Like, my first thing, I didn't tweet it, but my first thought was,
Simon,
God, he's got a talent to fall back on. Well, I never knew he played guitar, and that shows a lot of restraint on his part as a comedian.
He did release a song 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? Why isn't he out there with the guitar all the time?
Well, because it's difficult to strut around and yell while you're playing an acoustic guitar.
Oh, you think that probably ruins his vibe or whatever?
He would have to get a headset.
Because Stephen Lynch is pretty up there in terms of, like, I mean, I know he's no Dane Cook, but... But, I mean, in terms of, like, he's extremely popular, and that's all he does is sit there with a guitar,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just seems to me, like, as someone who can't play any musical instruments or sing, that's a shortcut I would have grabbed onto and ran with if that
you
was
play the pipe.
A possibility in my act, right?
That was a high five you heard.
Yeah, if I could just go out
and
do bong hits and have people cheering.
You should come up with a musical pipe that while you're inhaling you can play different notes as you're pulling air through it. All right, let me get back to
think that's why isn't that what's that thing that Peter Frampton used to play.
Because
that looks like a vaporizer with the
like a vocoder.
Yeah.
So anyway, when Dane is up there doing the roast of Simon, And I guess someone stormed the stage that wasn't supposed to. There was some sort of a weird
soy bomb. The roast was about all the horrible things Simon has said to people in a song. Like the lyrics were the chorus was Simon says, and then the other parts. the other lyrics were all about.
Is your phone still on?
I don't think so.
Oh, good. You're in airplane mode.
Yeah, I'm in airplane.
Yeah, because if we hear tick tick ticks,
we're not gonna hear. I haven't heard any yet.
Okay.
I put mine in airplane mode. I can tell because there's a little airplane.
A tiny little airplane.
Anyway, what was I talking about?
You're talking about the guy that stormed out during his set.
Well, they brought out a bunch of people that were like people that Simon supposedly insulted. All sort of came out, mm-hmm. and then the final one was they brought out William Hung or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that William Hung came out at the end of the Pants on the Ground song.
William Hung and Dane Cook on one stage.
It was an amazing show. But anyway, those were two different numbers. But for some reason, one of the nuts in Dane Cook's song grabbed the microphone and said, I'm going to pull a Kanye and blah, blah, blah. And they went right to commercial. And then Ryan Seacrest did an ad-lib about it. Nobody ever spoke of it again. But Dane Cook Dane Cook did tweet about it and say that, yeah, that guy just did jack the mic and then they cut away. But the song, he said the song was
practically over. So you're following Dane Cook on Twitter? Is that what you're telling me?
I do follow Dane Cook on Twitter.
Didn't he say, it's interesting. Didn't he say, I'm just glad that guy didn't hit my face when he took the mic because it would have
been lights out time.
Yeah, lights out time where he said it would have been gone from American Idol to American Face Punch.
Uh oh.
Yeah, American Idol to American show. Dead Asshole who tried to jack my microphone.
It's go time. It's go time.
No, I don't know what he said.
Tonight, an American guy tried to jack my ass idol.
I think it was more clever than that, whatever it was he said.
But the painful part that I was talking about I felt empathetic as a comic, like you just don't want this to happen ever. But when he was doing the song, it cut to a full shot of Simon who just kind of looked over to the other two and rolled his eyes like, oh, geez. Which was such
a moment. That's how he reacted to everything.
And then they cut to a wide shot and Ellen was stoically staring off to the side. She would not look at the stage. And it was this kind of weird moment of she just didn't want any part of it whatsoever.
I bet he's been on her show, though, a few times, I'd imagine.
I don't know.
During the writer's strike when she kept her show running?
Yeah. That was waiting. You were waiting for that to come out, right? Do you feel any better now? Because you feel like you got that out.
No. I just thought of it. That's why I said it. Still, I really got to think about it.
Still a bubbling pile of blackness inside.
And I gotta say, as an Idol fan, I didn't mind Ellen DeGeneres, and I didn't miss Paula one bit. Like, people are saying the ratings are coming down, and they're trying to point to things, like, that the singers are shitty, or that Paula Abdul's not there. And it's more like, no, it's been on for eight
fucking
years.
The show's been on a long time.
And Glee, is now, oh, look, now we get to see kids singing, and they sing well every single song.
Every
and they
time.
Dance, there's choreography.
Right, right, right.
Like, American Idol is so stilted and stiff compared to the show that, you know, is right after it most weeks.
Right,
know?
Right, right.
They added a Glee song to The Fountain at the Grove. And it's infuriating.
Oh, which one? Is it Journey?
Journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they replace the Lionel Richie song?
No, that's still All Night Long's going.
Okay.
You're here, Petra Hayes.
Can't ever lose All
8
Night
o'clock.
Long.
8 o'clock, guys. 8 o'clock at night.
Did they ever play TLC's Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls? Because that would be a good fountain song.
I would listen to that.
Yeah, you ever hear Petra Hayden's
acapella
version of Don't Stop Believin'?
No.
It's great. She has like a whole choir doing like all female acapella girls doing Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. It's amazing.
Check that out.
Petra Hayden. She has a whole album full of she even did a whole acapella album of Who songs.
Oh, that's genius.
Yeah, but Petra from That Dog, the band That Dog.
It's like Sunkill Moon did the
they
Muse
did Modest
album.
Mouse.
Modest Mouse,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and his version of
Mark Kozelek. Awesome.
City's Made of Ash is like really good.
Awesome. You know, it's funny because it didn't register in my head at first when I first heard that album that it was a Modest Mouse album.
Yeah, it's good.
And then I realized, I thought, wow, these songs were. And then I went, and then I realized that that's what, you know.
Never mind. I should get that. I should get that album again. It's a good album.
Really good.
All right, let's pick it up at Amoeba later.
All right.
Oh, making plans.
They hang out together. This isn't just a professional relationship. These guys actually hang out together.
Doug, how long have you been in Los Angeles?
Out of the arc light and see.
You've been in LA for a while because
dresses and see Sex in the City too.
You've been
to it, and then we'll go to the Cheesecake Factory after.
Oh,
it's
not so good.
You guys, I am so the Miranda in this. Actually, I think Jonah's the Miranda, and I'm probably I'm not a Samantha.
I am Carrie because I am the most horse-like.
Oh.
Whoa.
That's one way to look at it, I guess.
What are you, Doug?
I don't know. That's tough.
Well.
I loathe them almost equally. What's Kristen Davis?
Okay, well, then you're a Miranda.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the bitchy one.
Her name was Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah.
Yeah, I had to pretend for a second. I didn't know.
I'd see Sex and the City 2 if I was dating somebody right now, like if I had a girlfriend.
Like another guy.
Would you really want to date somebody that wanted to see Sex and the City 2?
Well, it's just sort of, it's become, now I don't know who said it, but it's so funny. Somebody called it Too Big to Fail.
Oh.
Mindy Kaling retweeted it. But somebody else called Sex and the City Too Big to Fail.
Oh, Janie Haddad.
Yeah. Paul Tompkins' wife.
Yeah.
New wife. She said that Sex and the City 2 is too big to fail.
Yeah.
Just like David Banks. Yeah. Because it's like, you know, if I were a chick, I would want to see it just because how many movies are for them?
How many women have, how many movies have strong female leads? Like four of them. Four of them buying shoes and talking about periods and fucking.
Going off to the Sahara. Like, it's like, why do they have to do something like that? Like, why not another movie that's like that TV series that everybody loved that didn't go off to a different country?
I can't wait till Sex and the City 3 when they go to Mars to like make oxygen.
I think they should. I think they should combine it with a Bourne movie. The Sex and the City identity.
That'd be a great move to all of a sudden turn the franchise into being like an action adventure series.
If I were a crazy billionaire, I would totally do shit like that.
Yeah. Or go animated. That's why I Sex and the City Babies.
I always wanted to do an L Word Babies show where it was just adorable lesbian babies living life out loud. And we never get to see that. But Showtime is doing the real L Word. Like, we did that scripted L Word before, but here's a reality-based L Word.
Now they got
L-word.
Another thing called the C Word, and it's for cancer, so that's disappointing.
Oh, I was hoping I was hoping it was for talking vaginas.
I was hoping it was all a series about Laura Linney's vagina.
Wouldn't you watch a show that was just talking vaginas? I would watch that show.
Maybe. Do you have to look at it sideways?
Yep.
Or do they flip it for you?
They flip it.
They better flip it for me. I'm not tweaking my neck out.
So, Doug, we covered this. I'm sorry to repeat some of this because we covered this the first time we recorded you, and that recording is useless because of a technical error. But you and I
did a whole show for just the four of us.
For just this, so it was just like we were hanging out.
Yeah, we sweated in that fucking room.
You're gonna miss out.
It's like I hung out with Mike Furman yesterday. It was the first time in years we've actually hung out without a project that we had to finish.
That's
like
nice.
It was just hanging out as friends. We went to the Museum of Jurassic Technology,
which
is fucking amazing. And I don't want to give away too much about the museum. You should just go and judge it for yourself. But it's in Culver City. It's been around for 21 years, and it is a gem in Los
really
Angeles.
Cool.
So.
They finally get locking mechanisms on the vehicle doors.
Culver. No.
What's even worse about that is he had just made that reference right when we got here.
That line gets stuck in my head. That guy's dead. He died of cancer. Anyway.
Well, that makes it okay then.
I always like the part where they learned to open the doors, you know, in the compound. They just learned to do that and just figure it out.
I love that.
And then the way when they're explaining it, I always thought Samuel Jackson said they also learned how to dial 9 for an outside line.
I just love to see this. Love to see this kind of limp little foreclaw come off and then hit the choop choop like the alarm on the fucking car.
There was that moment in the critic. They had that like one of their cutaways in that cartoon, The Critic, where it's like they figured out how to unlock the doors, and it's just like. You see, like, a newspaper come underneath the door, and then, like, the key wiggles out and falls on
they pull it back in.
But, Doug, you and I first met in 1994 when you were a writer on MTV's Trashed, which was the first job that I ever had. And it was you and Posehn and Steve Higgins, who's now on the Fallon show and who wrote for SNL, and his brother Dave Higgins, and Dave Allen, who was a naked trucker, and Joel Hodgson from Mystery Science Theater. And it was really an amazing collection of people. And by Odenkirk and Cross and Janine Garofalo and everyone. You guys all did sketches on the show. And it was really... And the show died pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, it lasted one cycle. But it took us over a year to develop it. And you came in when we were on about month 11. And it really came down to... We were really going to do it, and we really needed a host. And they looked at a million people to be the host, and then plucked you out of somewhere. Like we weren't part of any audition that you did or anything. They were just suddenly like, "It's going to be Chris Hardwick," and we're like, "Who? What? Wick?"
Yeah, they plucked me out of the gap at UCLA because they had to come in and style me. I was this preppy kid at school, and they had to style me in like baggy pants and a gas station attendant shirt and a
chain wallet. Dude, like strangely enough, like because they buy in wildly varying, you know, they gather clothes that are sometimes going to be too big for you.
Yeah.
So stuff that was too big for you, I wore for years. Like, I got totally hooked up by Paula Ellens.
Who's a wardrobe stylist.
Yeah. Who I'm friends with to this day whenever I run into her. Because she always works on, you know, she worked on Mr. Show, then she worked on Sarah Silverman program. So I like show up and have to be fitted by her every once in a while. And we have a lovely time whenever I see her. But she hooked me up, gave me so much of your clothes that you didn't wear.
You got a lot of pairs of Dickies.
Stuff you wore once. Sure. Like sometimes you'd wear like three layers, so the jacket would be kind of big and baggy, and then it would fit nice on me, you know?
Terrible look, by the way. Super skinny guy wearing very baggy clothes. But that was the 90s.
That was part of it, was like trying to keep you from looking like they pushed a skeleton out there. Shook it around. And it
like in a creepy Popeye cartoon with the dancing.
Trivia questions.
That's fantastic.
But that was a really fun experience. Like some crazy stuff happened there. One of the other riders was Chris Henshey, who is now famously married to Brooke Shields.
Yep.
Which I could never, you know, that's the sort of thing that never in a million years do you see that coming. Where we're, when him and I and Mark fight and who was another person on that set that was a maniac?
Oh,
the four of us were playing.
Toby Huss.
We'd play chicken where one guy would get on another dude's shoulders and another guy would get on another dude's shoulders. And I was on Chris Hitchie's.
Wait, you were in some kind of a pool, right, Doug? Or over a mattress of some sort?
No. We were in a small room with tabletops with jagged, you know.
And gravity.
Like hard edges. And lots of hard corners, and we would just do that until we were all on the ground, and it was insane.
Wrestling shirts come off.
I remember one time I think we nearly wiped out into your mom, who was just trying to make her way through the hallway to get to your dressing room.
You would have crushed her. She's a tiny lady.
Yeah, but I just, you know, to go from being on the dude's shoulders doing that to like, yeah, and he's now married to and has children with Brooke Shields.
Do you think play chicken at home? Do you think he puts Brooke on his shoulders? Chris Henshey's the one that told me that there are no nerve endings in your elbow skin, and you can squeeze or bite really hard on it. Not that I'm recommending that people do that. I don't want you to hurt yourself. But
what if you do?
There's no nerve endings there, so this doesn't hurt no matter how hard you squeeze it. It doesn't.
What about pinch?
No, it doesn't.
I can feel it.
No, just like you straighten your arm, and then just this little bit of flap of skin right there.
Yeah, but if I pinch it with
Little because I have no body fat to speak of.
And your blood is also made of marijuana, so you probably can't feel...
Yeah, you're right. You can't feel it, but you could make it hurt. Like, you know, like if you stuck it with
like
a pin.
If I put my my fingernails, like,
Shot my elbow with a gun, I would totally. Right. I would probably feel that.
If somebody bites your elbow skin, you're gonna feel it.
If a velociraptor who's gotten into your car because you were dumb enough to leave your keys on the floor. Velociraptor's biting my elbow! I can't feel it. Yeah, just gingerly nipping at your elbow because velociraptors love elbow
moves. Velociraptor 3 was so bad. Jurassic Park 3 was terrible.
Were there too many lens flares in it for you? Not enough whales?
Jurassic Park 3. I liked the Lost.
Is that the one where they
I liked the second one.
The second one in some ways is better than the first,
yes.
I think.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
The third one is an abomination.
Is that the one where he ends up in a...
I don't think I saw the third one.
Is that the... Like,
the third one has Bill Macy in it?
Nope, didn't see it.
Part two was during Vince Vaughn's lengthy detour into drama.
Yes.
Like, he was a drama guy for forever. And it's like, wasn't your first movie a comedy? Weren't you funny in that? Yeah. Like, he was, like, in so many dramas there for a while.
And now he's in too many comedies.
If I have to see a shitty comedy, I want him to be in it. Because even when it blows, something about him I find entertaining.
I think he's amazing. I thought Vince Vaughn's Wild West comedy tour was difficult to watch.
Right, but that's because a lot of it was just like really long stretches of stand-up comedy in a movie theater, like watching an audience watch comedy in a movie theater.
I think Vince Vaughn's great, and I totally understand why they tried to make a dramatic star out of him because, you know, he's got this sort of classic, sort of dreamy leading guy look, and they were like, well, we gotta fucking make him, you know, a super actor. And
he went the independent route on so many things. He was in that thing with Jeanine Clay Pigeons. He was just in every other indie movie for a while. And it was like, maybe he was just enjoying himself, or I don't know. Or just in that first movie, he just thought of himself as an actor, not as a comedy actor.
I think he's great. Hey, if you're Vince Vaughn and you're listening, come be on the show.
Yeah, totally come be on this show. That would be so sweet. It'll be him talking and you guys listening, probably.
That would be really amazing.
Yeah. His old buddy, Craig Kilborn's coming back to TV.
I know.
What?
Craig Kilborn!
It's crazy. Yeah, he's going to have...
It's a show on Fox.
He's going to have a half-hour daily, like, almost daily show kind of thing. Like, kind of going back to his roots.
Huh.
But it's going to be on all the Fox O&Os, the owned and operated.
And who do you think's going to take it over and make it big after he quits?
I don't know.
Yeah, it sucked. Like, he was on the Daily Show, and he did a fine job, but then Stewart takes over, and it becomes an Emmy-winning show.
Yeah.
Then he does a Late Late Show, and then he leaves, and Ferguson is now doing, you know, like...
I still remember John Stewart's last week, or first week, where they did 5 questions, then 4 questions, 3 questions.
Yeah. They faced it out.
Really funny.
But they still do Moment of Zen, and they still... I don't know if he came up with that. That was probably Winstead or the other lady, but it's still... You know, that's the thing about Kilborn, is it just like he went away, he, you know, showed up in Old School,
which is hilarious. Bad guy,
he was great in Old School, phenomenal.
And then, isn't he also in Benchwarmers, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the story, I don't know if this is true, I can't confirm this, but what I had heard was that he had asked for a raise in the Late Late Show, and CBS said no, and he said, well, you either give me a raise or I'm going to quit. And they were like, enjoy your vacation. And so, and that was it.
Yeah.
So I had heard he kind of painted himself into a corner where it was like, well, if I don't quit now, then I'm not ever going to have any, you know, like, they're never going to listen to me. And so, but that's what I heard, but I don't know if that, I don't
but
know.
That's where, what I strangely admire about him is that he didn't just sort of went away for a while, and then now he, you know, he's back with
I saw the commercial for it, and they're like, Kilby's coming back. Like, who the fuck is Kilby? Is that, is that some adorable anime creature?
Kilby!
It's something he called himself on occasion. But I'm excited that he's coming back because he's going to have a panel. You know, kind of in the style of Chelsea Lately, or
let's ride Kilby to Rainbow Island.
Me.
He's gonna do a round
table. And I would feel comfortable sitting at a table riffing with that dude.
I would too.
I think it would be fun.
I would too. I totally would.
I've always appreciated that guy.
He was so good on SportsCenter back in the day.
Yeah,
And Keith Olbermann.
Keith Olbermann, before Keith Olbermann became. Here's a note to you, Mr. President. take it down.
Oh my God! Dylan Radigan and the Ed Show yell at you even more than Olbermann. Like when Chris Matthews is becoming like the quiet one. That's a that's a pretty noisy network.
What it started to annoy me about Keith Olbermann's countdown is that every guest he had, he would just have someone on to say exactly what he said.
Well, now they have promos that say. Him addressing that specifically.
Really?
That they run a lot. Yeah. That basically him saying that he's not just bringing people on to agree with him, he's bringing people on for him to verify the facts.
You can't, you know, I'd always be like,
here's what I say, now say it different.
No, you can't, but I mean, like, you can't really blame. If Olbermann's doing, if any performer starts doing something, there's like this sort of Darwinian thing that happens. If you start doing something and it's the thing that people are responding to, consciously or unconsciously, you're going to continue to do that thing because you're being rewarded for it in some way.
Hence my pot smoking.
Exactly. Yeah. So sooner or later, it just becomes the thing that you're known for.
The world is enabling you.
And yeah. how do you know, like, you know, you don't necessarily have the same perspective on it anymore because you're just the guy who's doing what you think you need to be doing to survive.
Do you think your pot smoking feels contrived?
No. I mean, it's...
He really does it. When I saw...
It's
when
really
I,
organic.
When you were doing... Because I was around you when you were shooting Super High Me.
Yeah.
And when you were on, like, day 21 or 2 of smoking pot every day, I saw you backstage at UCB and your eyes were these little slits. And I was like, Doug, is this... How is it? Smoking pot every waking second. And you were like... It's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Like, you really...
You were so stoked
You really were. There was no Morgan Spurlock, like, throwing up out of the side of the car with the Big Macs. Like, you were really...
Well, that's what I always say, is that the only side effects I experienced were weight gain and fun having.
Now, why do you think that... How was it that you didn't go back to that? You know, because now... I mean, you still smoke pot, but you're...
Well, I'm still sort of, I'm as there as I can be, you know, like they were driving me around and filming me all the time, so it was my job, really, you know.
Dad, it's my job.
To be high all the time, but now that it's not my job, I'm not, like, insistent on being high all the time, and that's part of what I proved in the movie, I think, is that, you know, I went 30 days without it, and it wasn't that difficult.
You do 30 days on and off of drinking, too, right? One month on,
No, the whole thing, the whole 60 days was no drinking, and that was much harder than... than not smoking.
Did you find it harder just based on, like, in social situations, not grabbing a drink, or...
Yeah, that's just, it's just the thing, is that, like, smoking has been relegated to before and after my shows. Mm-hmm. I cannot smoke during my shows, right. But I can drink during my shows, and I do.
Yeah,
and
that's...
Every night I have a cocktail.
And that was the weirdest thing about quitting drinking for me so many years ago, is that there's almost no worse profession other than being a bartender... than being a comic and not drinking, because you're fucking always, comedy clubs are bars. Yeah. And so you're always around it. Always.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting way to go about
it. Yeah, no, I thought that it was extremely zen of you to not only stop drinking, but also never relapse when you're in comedy clubs all the time. And also never complain about it. I've never once heard you, oh man, I wish everyone's drinking.
I don't
fun.
Miss
I
it.
If anything, you were at bars and comedy clubs even more when you quit drinking.
Yeah,
you were just going out so much.
I don't really miss it. I don't. I miss. You know what? I miss like, oh, if I'm out of town, like if I were to go to Europe, oh, it'd be really nice if I could have a drink, like a glass of wine or a beer or something outside where it's really in a piazza when it's really nice. And, but then I just kind of go, yeah, then it would end up being 20 beers. And then it just seems gross to me.
I find that environment everywhere I go. Like every once in a while, I'll be sitting around not thinking a drink would be nice right now. But whenever I'm somewhere beautiful or about to watch something, or, like these movie theaters that have where they bring you booze at your seats, I love that. You know, it doesn't happen that often or often enough.
Do you think we're going to legalize pot in California when it goes on the ballot?
Well, it's supposed to be on the ballot in November on the 2nd. I'm going out on tour with Graham Elwood this summer we're doing the Pot the Vote tour, where we're going to hit like 5 or 6 cities in California and try to do as much media as we can to remind people to vote. And then that, of course, is 3 or 4 months before the actual voting, so I don't know if it's going to be effective.
Well, wait, what happens if it's legal? Does it become like Amsterdam? Are there like pot districts where you can go into a bar and they serve you, they give you bricks of pot? Or is it just, that the federal government stops busting these dispensaries?
That's it. If the state votes to legalize it, it'll still be illegal according to the feds. But the state will have said it's legal. So then, just like the dispensaries have had since medical marijuana has been legal, there will be probably skirmishes with the feds of some sort.
Man, that's
but
insane.
I imagine personal use, just like with medical marijuana, no fed's ever going to bust into my house.
Right.
Just because I bought some from a place.
Although they might bust into your house specifically. You're pretty outspoken about it.
Maybe, but, you know, they're not going to...
Should we bust a guy with 30 joints in his mouth on the DVD cover?
That was photoshopped.
What of the money that the state gains... What of the money that the state gains from these dispensaries? Like, is that considered not valid by the feds?
No,
like,
I mean, that's part of the thing, is that the reason it's going to be on the ballot in the fall is...
Because we're broke.
Well... You know, they got it. They got enough signatures to get it on the ballot. But then, in addition to that, it also is going to possibly help. I mean, it's the number one cash crop in many states in this country, and it's illegal in all of those states that it's the number one cash crop.
Isn't it almost like the federal government going in and busting Indian gaming casinos? We're like, it's legal to gamble.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, but our state said it was okay to do on the reservation. I mean,
it's essentially kind of the same thing, and that's why Obama said knock it off. But who knows what's going to happen when this flip is switched on November 2nd. Like, I you know, right now the polls are saying 65% of Californians think it should be legal, and I think most of those think that because they either don't care or they think it's going to help financially. It's going to help the state. But it's interesting that there's still no ads on TV pro or con. Like, I don't know how hard anyone's going to come up against it.
But I don't think California's not as progressive as people think it is.
No.
LA and San Francisco, I mean, like, I think we learned that from the Prop 8.
The gay marriage thing.
The Prop 8 fiasco.
Really,
what you realize is that there's really, like, two progressive places in California, LA and San Francisco. San Francisco, really, the most. And then everything else is rednecks in between.
Yeah,
you know,
no one seems to understand that like most
except
of
for our listeners in those places.
Yes,
of course. You guys,
love you guys.
No, don't let them off easy. You know I'm talking to you,
hey.
Wairika.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Wairika is
the meth capital.
Meth capital, also highest
the meth capital of meth.
Highest per capita of KKK members in the entire country.
Per capita. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like it's just because
they're just falling out of the cabinets.
KKK capita.
Please don't make fun of the KKK, because I said one thing on Twitter.
Wait a minute.
I got threatened.
Please don't make fun of them.
Well, make fun of them, but I got horribly threatened, and they fucking scare me.
Because
really? if you are still in the mindset like, yeah, it's okay to go on sheets, you know, put sheets on and burn crosses and tell people of different races they're inferior, you're obviously not Like, you obviously don't have a problem just going out and fucking murder.
Like, reason isn't one of your hobbies.
Maybe not.
Do I remember all of it?
That came out wrong. I didn't mean don't mention the KKK. That's one of those things where they took the quote out of context.
It's a secret institution. Whatever you think about it, don't make fun of it.
What I meant is don't attract their ire to me or this podcast.
Do I remember all of the family incorrectly in my childhood, or did the Ku Klux Klan try and recruit... and all in the family. Didn't they try and recruit him? And then, like, I remember that...
No, that was the Halloween episode.
No, it must have been.
Yeah, I think I made some joke
that
on...
was just ghost trick-or-treating.
The most unfortunate ghost costume.
I made some joke on Twitter, like, there was some article about, are babies racist? And so I said something like, Coochie Coo or Coochie Ku Klux Klan, and and I think I also made some...
But that's adorable. Why would they ever get mad?
I also made some Ku Klux Klown joke where it was like a racist clown. But and then that was like...
Like,
I got,
call me the clown, but white?
Right. I got like horribly threatened. And I looked up some of these people and they ran like these weird BDSM sites and they lived in rural parts of the Pacific Northwest. And
how does
like,
the internet get out there?
Is it?
How does that happen?
Through hatred. Their hatred is so strong that it forms this telepathic link.
It's a hate net. There's a whole lot
of hate net. It's a satellite of hatred.
I'm learning a lot, guys.
Lasties.
Now, Doug, Mike Furman and I...
You know, it's like if a bunch of monkeys pound a rock on a computer, eventually they'll write some hate speech. or Shakespeare.
That's funny. You just reminded me that when we were doing Trashed, Steve Higgins, who was our head writer, who then went on to do SNL...
And he's the voice on the beginning of Jimmy Fallon.
Amazing guy. One of the funniest people
Late
we've ever
night
made.
With Jimmy Fallon!
I
like how he's running and the Roots are playing.
He had said that he would get these puzzling notes back from the network all the time. And he'd go, you know, it's like if you're playing computer chess against someone and you don't see the other person and they're making these moves and they're kicking your ass because you think they're brilliant. And then you come to find out the person on the other end is a monkey. And they're like, they're just making these random decisions. And you're like, they're brilliant. But it's just a random... assortment of... Are you texting right now?
Are you not on airplane mode?
No, I wanted to show you guys something. No, I'm still in airplane mode.
See?
So you told me you could do everything still. I didn't know that. But when I used to... When Sarah was dating Jimmy Kimmel, I used to frequent tapings of his show, as a few of my other friends did as well. And we would say, you know, we would just call it JKL when referring to it in text. And so... But the first time I wrote JKL... Well, now it's finally doing it right. It finally learned it. But the first few times I wrote JKL into my iPhone, it suggested KKK.
Oh.
Which means somebody
was like, we should put this in the vocabulary.
Put three initials together and one of them's a K, it might be KKK.
America.
I should make it easy on
America.
I tried to put crab in once and Arab came up.
It's weird.
If you type ghost B, Ghostbusters comes up properly.
Really?
Capitalized and everything.
Oh, so
nerd does not come up.
Totally put that in.
Nerd does not come up when you try to type nerd in. It doesn't. It's like I would think that'd be the first fucking word they would put in the iPhone, and it's not. It's not in the iPhone.
They don't think that way themselves.
No.
They don't know. They don't look in a mirror.
Technically, you can add words to your own dictionary by making them contacts.
Yeah. Also, Sasquatch comes up. SASQ. Sasquatch.
Oh, that's interesting. Still not nerd.
So apps still work.
I have to say your first gen iPhone is in surprisingly good condition.
You want to tell the story?
Oh.
I went to an amusement park one day with my first gen iPhone and it was in St. Louis and it was sweating and it was gross and we went on tons of rides, me and Graham Elwood. And it was one of those days where I'm soaking wet. But you know how the iPhone is, it feels like it can get wet.
Right.
A little wet or whatever. And then suddenly when I went to type something, the entire middle row of keys wouldn't work at all. And when you eliminate an entire middle row of letters, it's very hard to even cryptically tell people things in a text. So,
right.
So suddenly that was like something I couldn't do anymore, which drove me nuts that I couldn't text and that it was doing that.
Why does Doug keep writing QWERTY?
And I called up Matt and I said, hey, Genius Bar, what's the deal with...
Which sounds sarcastic when you call someone Genius Bar. It sounds like you're saying they're stupid. Hey, Genius Bar.
Shit.
No, but you know what I mean. I have a friend that's a Genius Bar guy, and I take advantage of it. And so I texted him what was happening, and he wrote back, oh, yeah, sometimes that's the thing that happens to him because of moisture. Because of excess moisture... in my pocket running around the amusement park on a hot day, it made the middle row of my keyboard go out, and that's something there had been precedent with. Like, that's an ongoing problem. Oh, yeah, that's just because you had... Like, you knew what the problem was immediately.
Yeah, unfortunately, your ball sweat is creating too much moisture for the device.
Yeah, so...
And they can tell when there's moisture damage. They just run a flashlight into the port underneath, and you can see...
a liquid indicator.
So he got me a late generation, first generation, when I had to switch it in.
A late gen, first gen. Because
there was no way to fix it.
Nice.
So I swapped it out because I had whatever
AppleCare
warranty you talked me into buying.
And his sensor wasn't tripped.
So with Super Jaime, you had Furman and I, we made a song for you for the movie.
Yes, you did. I'm eternally grateful for that.
Which appears for a couple seconds in the car.
You guys happily and quickly took the assignment. I said, come up with a 30-second theme song that's peppy and bouncy.
Well, many years ago,
fun.
Mike Furman came home one night really high, and so he just recorded... Because he was super, super high, he recorded this thing of just him going, I'm super fucking high. And there was some giggling. And so we took that and built a song around it. And so when we end the podcast, I will end the podcast with that song so people, if they care, they can hear it.
Oh, for reals? I thought we were talking about the I Love Movies theme.
Oh, we did the I Love Movies theme as well.
What I thought we were talking about.
I was talking about Super Fucking High, which is in Super High.
That's hilarious.
We've done a couple of Doug Benson projects.
Well, that was
not a theme song for this show.
The
interesting.
Yeah, no, Onomatoguchi does our theme song.
The podcast was first.
Yep.
Right, you did that.
Yeah.
And then I said, would you guys like to do a song for Super Jaime?
Yeah.
When we were making it because I saw the writing on the wall that we were going to have no budget for songs, so we were just like getting whatever we could mm-hmm. in there. And so I asked you guys to write something, and then. Does it play as an instrumental in the movie? Or because you don't get to hear you actually singing, I'm super fucking
high. I thought
high.
It was in the credits.
No, it's in the, it's, there's one scene where they're in a car.
There's one scene, but I think it's just a kind of an instrumental.
Yeah,
version
yeah,
of
yeah. yeah.
I think you, it had a long instrumental break in it or something.
I think we had hoped like, this is going, I hope stoners love this song. But I don't know if anyone likes it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that... there was just the hold up on the end of, you know, when I gave it to I was like, here's the song for the movie. And I gave it to him and it was just like, you know, I didn't want to give you guys notes per se, but they just sort of reacted badly to the fucking over and over again. Because we're already making a pro-drug documentary and then like, you know. They never thought we could get a PG-13, I don't think, but they still thought that was just like, you know, something that's just going to be a headache down the road.
Yeah, I totally understand.
You have to
bleep
out all the fucks and tell
then you can't
TV
hear the song. The word fuck is in that song like 60 times.
You have to make it NC-17.
Yeah, so that's where there was kind of a stumbling block there, but they still used, you know, part of it like just sort of as like transition music
something.
But the I Love Movies theme, now the show is called Doug Loves Movies, because that's what you sing in the song, and that's also when people Google it, that'll be the first thing that comes up.
Which is better, because if you write I Love Movies in Google, then that's...
You'll still get my podcast, it's pretty close to the top of that, but you'll basically, the first thing will be like porn, probably.
That's called bad SEO.
Yeah. So we changed it to Doug Loves Movies, and... But now I'm meeting people in bands and asking them to do covers of your song.
Yes, you know what? My friend Tony Thaxson from Motion City Soundtrack sent me a text.
He says they're going to try to do a cover of it.
Oh, I would love that. I sent him the lyrics.
And then,
it all makes sense, huh?
It does. That's how it works.
Like, you know, except for it won't be a new one every week, but it'll be like Weeds, you know, like every...
Like Weeds, yeah.
Every
yeah.
few months I can, like, pop in a new one for a few episodes.
I love that.
Gene Spector's was the best.
The which ones?
Regina Spektor's.
My buddies did one too. The Man. They did a Weeds one opening.
I love that song.
Yeah.
And then they kind of abandoned that whole.
Well, they now it's just like the opening title sequence is just a quick flash on some sort of object with Weeds. Like it's always like an art, you know, it's like a design thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually no music or anything. It's just like a quick title.
Now, Doug, you're a very smart guy because you've been doing comedy for a long time and you've managed to build you've slowly built all these different Doug Benson themed properties, like the not to make it sound artistic, not to take any of the art out of it, but you know the Doug Loves Movies, and then the Benson Interruption, which is phenomenal. And I'm doing your Benson Interruption in June. What's the date?
It's June 14th.
June 14th.
This is gonna come out before then.
This is going up tomorrow.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I'm putting it up tomorrow.
Holy,
let's
talk more topical shit then.
Yeah. Memorial Day.
Did you guys see that movie W? Yeah, the Benson Interruption on June 14th will feature you, and also, like, guests are always kind of tentative because people have things that come up and things they're doing, or they just forget that they said yes to me. But tentatively right now, it'll be you and Sarah Silverman and Paul Scheer and, you know, others to be named later. And for anybody that's listening to the Nerdist podcast that might not be familiar with the Benson Interruption, it's essentially me hosting a show, but then I sit on stage with a microphone during each act and contribute. And it's sort of, it started off as like, come out, try your new bits or do some classic bits, whatever you want to do, and I'll try to jump in. But now it's sort of got into more of a storytelling mode, because if anybody comes out and tells a story that I haven't heard before, it's just fun to get my take on it as it goes along.
By the way, this is not a formula that just anyone can do. Do not interrupt your friend's shows just for the fuck of it. You have to be funny like Doug Benson for it to work, because your contributions have to build. Like, rather than just interrupting, you have to add.
It's almost like an improv game. Like, pretend you're, like, I've even done this with the Sklars. Like, I've stood on stage with the Sklar brothers and pretended to be the third Sklar. But I don't know what we're talking about. So I just have to repeat something they're saying or add another tag on to everything they say. And it's really fun to do because it's like a fun improv game. And you get bigger laughs on things that aren't that ingenious just because you clearly thought of it.
Well, also, I've come out of your shows with brand new stuff because I mean, I just feel like you're such a wonderful safety net. I know that if something doesn't fly, then it's sort of shitty on my part to be like, yeah, Doug will save this if it doesn't go. But
that's sort of how, like, Dax Shepard got involved with it. Like, he does a show whenever I have him on whenever he's not shooting something, because he's like, he's just a really funny guy and he's got great stories and he wants to kind of get into stand up and, you know. Especially because he could probably go to colleges.
He told the most amazing Michael Jackson story at that one Benson Interruption we did at Largo like 6 or 7 months ago, and it was phenomenal. He's fantastic. I knew Dax used to be at Groundlings, and I knew him.
Yeah,
when
and
he was
unpunked, he's got even though he's an actor, he's still got a lot of credibility.
He's a funny guy,
being spontaneously funny, and I'm finding more of those and trying to get them to do the show. Like, I'm trying to get John Hamm to do it because all he has to do is come out and tell a story and then I fuck with him. It's almost like panel on a talk show where there's not that constriction that everybody has on a talk show, which is like the whole discussion has to be made first.
Well, you're the sidekick in a way, but you're driving the show.
Yeah, but I also don't have to keep it moving. Like, if something's fun, we can dwell on it for as long as we need to as long as it's continuing to be fun. Like, whenever I watch anyone being interviewed on TV, even the best interviewers have that kind of look in their eye, like they're keeping track of when they've got to wrap it up. They're thinking about what their next question is, and in some cases, they're bored out of their minds.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So that's the other thing about the interruption is it's my friends telling jokes and me fucking with them. Like, that's my idea of a great time.
Well, then at Cinefamily the other night, which was formerly the Silent Movie Theater, you had me come and do a movie interruption with you and me and Scott Aukerman and Larry
Larry Zerner.
We did Halloween. I mean, Friday the 13th Part 3.
Oh yeah, I couldn't go. Yeah,
in 3D, but we watched a 2D print of it. And I mean, essentially, we're just Mystery Science Theatering the movie. But it was so much fucking fun, man.
Yeah,
we had so much fun.
Yeah, I was. Because people afterwards, you know, Larry Zerner and a couple other people were like,
"Who's in the movie?
How did you know people would show up and tolerate four guys on microphones yapping throughout a movie?" And I was just like, "Well, you know, obviously you have to pick the movie carefully. It's got to be something that has, you know, downtime in it. Like, you can't just watch like a classic screwball comedy or something where everything's happening and there's no."
There are long stretches of silence in Friday the 13th Part 3.
So horror movies are great for it. Probably science fiction will be great for it.
Yeah.
And then my intention now, because the Cinefamily was the guy that runs that place was thrilled.
Hadrian.
Hadrian. That's one of those names, Hadrian. Like, every time, the first few times you hear it, you're like, I'm going to maybe have to hear this a few more times. But Hadrian...
Well, I remember his name because Hadrian was a Roman emperor, if I'm not mistaken.
It had to be something old because I can't imagine somebody would make up Hadrian.
No.
But whatever he is.
It's an old name.
Whatever he is, he's running the theater now, and he was happy with the results. So my intention is to keep doing it once every 2 or 3 months. And the next movie I want to do is a movie called Torque.
Was that a bike movie?
That Adam Scott is in. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love Adam Scott.
And, it's got bikes and cars, and Adam Scott is like, he's a detective team that's on this particular case.
Is it a serious movie?
And it's kind of a comedy and kind of serious, but Adam's like the funniest in the movie because he kind of seems to get the tone of it. Like, mm-hmm. he kind of knows it's a piece of crap and acts accordingly. And but he's got a partner who I think is the woman who played the wife of the Hispanic coroner on 6 Feet Under. I think it's that kind of thing, like where it's just like a random character actress is his partner, and they're chasing after these dudes that are fights and street racing and all sorts of stuff. So it's got like crazy stunts in it. It's kind of like. I don't know. I don't think McGee directed it, but it's kind of like he clearly was standing around telling people what to do because it's kind of McGee vibe to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget who directed it, but anyway.
Was it like an answer to Fast and Furious or something?
It was. I don't know whether it was an answer to
Fast and Furious. A question.
It was an answer. Yeah. It was an answer to a question. It was definitely an answer to a question nobody asked because nobody saw the movie. Nobody really remembers it, but it does have some really funny stuff in it. But it also has, I think, enough downtime that we could do it. And I think that sort of gave us a little extra license, or it just made it more interesting to fuck around with one of the cast members right there doing it with us.
But do you think it has to be a movie that people are familiar with, though? I mean, like, part of the fun of Friday the 13th Part 3 is I imagine that most people that came to that knew that movie. So can people watch a movie they've never seen before and still...
I think so, because it's got to be...
Yeah,
but Mystery Science Theater was always colossally bad movies, like nothing good about them. You know, like where even if a character tried to make a joke, it wouldn't get a laugh. Whereas Torque actually has some intentionally funny stuff in it. Friday the 13th 3D, you know, had a couple of good gross-out moments that we
Do you mean the harpoon in the eye?
Yeah, but we got to have fun with it because they've got a button on the projector at CineFamily to just quickly show things like it's like TiVo. So, like, we'd be like, let's see that again.
Oh,
show
that's
us,
awesome.
Like, so every time somebody died violently, we'd watch it five or six times.
See the harpoon go into the eye five times.
That's great.
Yeah, so I don't know if any of that will go on with Torque, but yeah, that's my intention, is to try to meet people that are in movies that I like that are kind of funny, bad, but not terrible, but also I just think doing it with a great movie, it would have to be a certain great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet you we could have fun with, it's too long, but we would have fun with something like Gone with the Wind. Because as serious as it is, it doesn't hold up to a modern sense.
I should see if Rainn Wilson would come and we could do House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah. Well, that's an obvious good one because the movie's engaging, but also talking through it wouldn't work.
But and there's a lot. I think there's enough. You're right. Horror sci-fi is perfect because there's enough tension moments where you can you can talk through that.
Yeah, whenever somebody's like in Friday the 13th 3, it was amazing how often people were looking for something. You know, they're looking for somebody else, or they're looking for
walking into a barn for no reason.
There's just people wandering around and saying and like whatever they're looking for, they keep repeating it out loud.
Yeah.
And is anyone there? Yeah. Like, there's
this
a lot
is funny.
Of
funny. Come on.
Yeah, so there was a lot of room for us.
No, I'm dead.
For us to play. But did you notice the lady, the actress that was in the movie that Larry pointed out to us was there, and we introduced her at the beginning?
Yeah.
She didn't stick around after it was over.
But she was very nice afterwards. When I saw
her, she was happy.
Yes, she was happy.
Good.
And the guy that she was with was like, "Oh, this was so much fun."
Something awful about her at some point.
Oh no, I mean, surely she. You can't. She certainly couldn't be like, how could they trample over my art? Like,
yeah,
I'm sure it wasn't.
After like a bad line reading her, and I probably like mockingly did her voice and went, I want a dick in my mouth or whatever.
You should do the
movie. I'm sure
Rad.
I said something horrible.
Rad?
Yeah, because actually my buddy Sarah Haskins is engaged to the guy who wrote it. So that might be kind of fun for you to do.
That sounds good. So
I'm already getting suggestions from people on
So Doug Benson.
Got to show this movie.
So we can find you. We can find you.
Sound like that?
We can find you all over the place. We can find you on Netflix with Super Hi-Me. We can find you TV. Are you and Graham going to do another some more of your show?
Well, you know, interestingly, we did a pilot a special for G4 called The High Road, and it took forever for them to, you know, they grappled with it for a long time, and I give them credit for making this special to begin with. But ultimately, G4, you know, the network that does 420 Day every year, they had to pass on doing it as a series because they didn't want to finance something that is essentially a glorification of illegal drugs.
Which is you.
Which is essentially me, yes. So you might not see me on the channel much.
That's your brand.
In general. But like, you know, and I've been trying to explain this to people, they say, but they show Super Hi-Me over and over again. And I go, yes, but they didn't acquire Super Hi-Me. And in the case of the High Road, they made it, but they can kind of distance themselves because they don't advertise it that it's showing at all. They just kind of spring it on. And then also, every time I smoke, we had to edit it in a way that every time I smoke, I refer to it as medical marijuana while I'm doing it. And that would have been...
I guess I better start medical marijuana-ing.
Yeah, that would be a strain on a series to have to do that all the time. But they didn't even... They didn't even put it out there like that. They didn't say, hey, you can do like a lesser version of it. They just They just said, we can't do this show. We can't do it on a weekly basis. So now we're just sort of looking into the idea of, you know, essentially the High Road was just super high me continued. And so now I just want to kind of continue the High Road back into feature films. I want to try to get a movie version of Graham and I on the road together off the ground. And that's part of the plan this summer with the Pot the Vote thing.
Okay, so
we're going to try to film that tour.
So there's that, and then also Doug Loves Movies, which is hugely popular on iTunes, your podcast, and then also The Interruption, which people should see if you're in LA, June 14th, and then Doug Benson's Movie Interruption, which you should come see the next time that happens. and you're at Doug Benson on Twitter. Are you at DougBenson.com?
No, there's DougLovesMovies.com is a way if you don't want to go through the iTunes to...
I think Doug's also still one of the last people on MySpace.
Yeah, I'm holding up that
for you. Love it.
I love MySpace because I get friend requests every day still. If the friend requests stopped coming in, I would dump it or certainly pay less attention to it.
You got to accept those friendships because who else are you going to talk about tap out shirts with?
Right. But also, once you're in with the, once you've accepted them and vice versa, you can have, you know, trying to converse on Twitter is a pain in the ass, you know, because I don't want to follow somebody just so we can DM
each other.
So I have to, that's a great place to send them to is let's just go to MySpace. And you can write all you want in your letter to me, and I'll read it, and then I'll write all I want back to you. There's no restrictions.
Am I still on your top friends?
I think you are.
Nice.
Yeah, I haven't changed my top friends. I update the tour thing. I'll put a new album on the page when a new album
comes
out.
What's funny is you go to people's pages, and the top friends is like gaps. people
who dropped out. Yeah. I still have mine. I still have mine on there. All right.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, the people that are coming to, you know, and sending me friend requests on there, there's a very specific... thing that's happening. Like, you just look at their picture and you go, oh, yeah, they probably either smoke pot or go to a lot of movies. And it's mostly the pot smokers are... I think the pot smokers are taking over MySpace because it's gotten so quiet there.
You could fucking run that place. You could be the president of MySpace, Doug Benson.
Place where you can just run around. I'm not kidding. If I looked at it right now, I'd have 5 or 6 new friend requests without really... This is one of the few times I've ever even really talked about it lately.
There's some like these MySpace sympathizers who, with all this Facebook stuff, are like, "See, this is why I stayed here at MySpace. No privacy.
I'm just waiting for
issues
like a retro flashback. So because I'm still on Friendster and like I'm gonna be so cool.
Yeah.
Is Friendster really still going?
Oh, it's still around. Yeah, it's still Friendster still around.
I'll occasionally because I don't have the email that I signed up with Friendster or MySpace, so I can't cancel them. Because I'd cancel that email address.
You can upload a picture to Friendster.
Is Friendster like mostly older people then, or?
I think it might just be Rob Schneider.
I think it's all just skeletons.
skeletons and ghosts.
Yeah, I didn't even realize Friendster was still a possibility.
Yeah, it's still there.
So when I got out of there, I burned it down. I canceled my account.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, thank you very much for coming back and this was a super fun podcast, by the way.
Yeah. I think that was great. It wasn't as good as the one that didn't work out.
But you'll never know that, America.
Can you imagine if I actually really thought of it that way? Like, man, you guys fucked up and ruined the good one. This one will do, I guess.
I mean, as long as it's my voice out there promoting my stuff, I don't give a fuck. But seriously, way to fucking ruin the good one.
Yeah.
No, let's talk more about this particular podcast.
I was happy we got to do it again and that it went so well. And
he's waiting to turn it off.
It's a lovely home you have here.
Ah, yes. It is nice. You know, my favorite part of the podcast was minute 15. Where did we stop them?
Did you keep the notes?
I kept minutes. I am the minute taker. Say goodbye.
Bye. The end.
Extracted metallurgy. The main use of smelting is to produce a metal from its ore. Melting makes use of a chemical reducing agent to change the oxidation state of the metal ore. The carbon or carbon monoxide derived from smelting removes oxygen from the ore to leave the metal. Smelted carbon is oxidized, producing carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. As most ores are impure, it is often necessary in smelting to use flux, such as limestone, to remove the slag.
I'm super, I'm fucking, I'm super fucking high, I'm just super, I'm fucking, I'm super fucking high, I'm just super, I'm fucking, I'm super fucking high, I'm just super, I'm fucking, I'm super fucking, super fucking high. Why did I just walk into this room? Why did I just walk into this room?
Nerdist.com